honest. It's this late. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. What up, what up, what up? We are live. It's Mike Eshak here. About to get this podcast started, but before we do, just wanted to bring up some show dates that I got coming up. Putting them up on the screen right now. Wiley's, June 11th and 12th. Be headlining over there. Comedy Castle, June 17th and 19th. Also doing Gutties in June in Indiana, June 25th and 26th. Jewish Ensemble Theater in Detroit, June 27th. Doing Supernova in Hollywood, June 30th. Madhouse, July 2nd and 3rd. And Laughs Unlimited, July 16th and 17th. We got one viewer in here. I wonder if it's Jason Bacon. Comment if it's you. You might like this one. Mike Sasson is a fun guy to have on the podcast. Anytime I talk with this guy, I don't know. I just really enjoy our talks. This guy is very well read. He looks like Rush Limbaugh. Almost sounds like Rush Limbaugh.
We did the sketch that one time.
We did a sketch one time where he played Rush Limbaugh in hell, and I was an Arab devil, and, which was his hell. His hell is the devil isn't.
Thank you very much here in the EIB microphone here. Speaking to the devil himself, the Mr. Arab from Detroit, Michigan.
Well, let's bring him on, man. Everybody here is Mike Sasson.
How you guys doing?
Yeah.
Thank you. God bless everyone.
Yeah, buddy. All right, dude. So let's fucking get to it, homie.
Get to it.
I mean, let's just talk about you real quick before we get into you getting mad at everything that's going on in the world right now.
Yeah, that could take a while if we're just going to. We don't want to get right into the insanity, which is even just the drive over here. I was just like, yeah, there's some things that we got to get through. But yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I feel the same way. We always have some very deep philosophical conversations. I mean, the liberal Rush Limbaugh tag, it's interesting because, like, again, you saw me at a open mic and you were just like, hey, it's liberal Rush Limbaugh. And the funny thing is I don't feel that I'm necessarily liberal. But I get the fact that, like, I'm more liberal than maybe, say,
Rush Limbaugh.
But the funny thing is I did a set in Hollywood at the Improv, and you know you get the vibe from someone sometimes that, like, they've seen some stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, a comic that's just been around. And it's not somebody that you know. It's not like it's, you know, it's Bill Burr or something. But it's a guy that you could tell has, like, been there for 20 years and everyone knows him.
Yeah.
So he comes up to me afterwards. He goes, hey, good set. And I go, oh, thanks,
Bill Burr did?
Yeah, not Burr. I've never met Bill Burr. Mm. And then he walks away and he pulls around. He goes, woke Tim Dillon.
Woke Tim Dillon.
And I go, I don't know if I'm that woke. And he looks at me and he goes, take the gift. It's just like,
okay.
And I'm just
a gift.
Yeah,
would you say that's a gift?
Well, I think what he was trying to say was, especially in Los Angeles, everyone's trying to package themselves. Everyone's trying to give, like, a pitch to somebody that can be, like, within, like, if someone were to say, oh, tell me about Mike Sasson, like, someone would say, oh, he's liberal Rush Limbaugh. And so someone would sit there and go, okay, well, then I know exactly how I'll put him into this category or something like that. I mean, oh, he's woke Tim Dillon. Oh, okay, well, I know Tim Dillon, and I know he's a little bit more right-wing. Well, if I have a left-wing Tim Dillon,
but Tim Dillon's not right-wing.
I know, but that's the...
He comes off as right-wing.
Yeah, I think he's more... I think he's very similar in terms of... I view myself as a problem solver. I view myself as somebody that doesn't adhere to any sort of political... like ideology, because I always get upset when someone goes like, oh, you're conservative, you're liberal, you're whatever, because then they give you like 50 different ideologies that you're supposed to then adhere to. And then if you're like, no, I actually don't believe in X, then they're like, well, wait a minute, you're liberal. And I'm like, well, I said you're the one who said I was liberal kind of deal.
Well, we've been polarized, man, too. I know. Much is the problem, bro.
Well, and it's getting worse. That's the thing. Like, I remember...
it can only be one thing or another right
yeah.
now.
Well, because, like, it's really not even a debate on politics anymore. It's really a debate on culture, because it's really kind of like that. It's like my brother is married to someone who grew up in, like, really rural central Pennsylvania. And every time they go back, like for 4th of July or Memorial Day, he talks to the people who, like, live in the area. And the one thing he keeps on saying is these people believe their culture is under attack. They truly believe that their way of life is at stake.
Who's they again?
The people who live in central Pennsylvania. These white, rural, like
Republican
Trumpites. And a lot of them voted for Obama because they felt that he could help them out. But now they're not even about like supply side economics. They're not about trickle down economics. They're not about market economy. They're just, that's why like you see, you know, the Republicans a lot of times like really hammering on like, oh, transgender, you know, kids can't participate in XYZ sports or anything. It has nothing to do with really ideology or facts. It has really to do about defending the culture. And I think that that's why, again, we're so polarized, because it's one thing to have an idea. It's another thing to feel that you're defending, you know, your way of life. And
Do you think it's defending way of life, or is it? I think it's more of like a, well, it might be partially that, but I think it's more like, this is my team.
Well, they perceive it as, hey, we're not even, my team is defending, like if you ever watch Fox News. Again, they even say the
I try not to.
I try. Well, I watch everything.
Actually, I'm just joking when I say that. Yeah, I do watch everything too, but I haven't watched TV news in a while. But anyways, go ahead.
But it's they're very rarely about anything that is substantial, other than like they'll point out that in, you know, like that's why they hit on Chicago, they hit on LA, they hit on New York, because LA, New York, Chicago indicates the culture of liberalism, the culture of being permissive. And
liberal
like
strongholds.
That. Yeah. And so they go, well, if you want the entire world to look like this, then put these guys in charge. And that's why they keep on hammering on quote unquote culture. And that's why, again, it is their team. And it is, and you're very right, it is like a sports team. Because like, for instance, like, you know, I'm from Pittsburgh, I'm a Steeler fan. And so like when Ben Roethlisberger was getting in trouble, yeah, it was not cool. But again, you're like, he's still our quarterback. He's still our team. You know, it's the same thing I think a lot of people with when their politician says something stupid, you're like, hey, he's still our guy. He's, you know, and that hurts you, because again, you're not analyzing facts. You're just kind of saying, this is my team. This is my culture. This is what I believe in. And I can never accept any other viewpoints. Which is why when someone says, oh, you're liberal XYZ, it's always like, well, there's a lot of things that I believe that conservatives are right about, but I do believe in a lot of things that liberals are concerned about. So
isn't it funny, man? I'm hard-pressed to find people who actually know. I'm hard-pressed to find people who can be in the middle on some topics. I'm hard-pressed to find that. Like, you know, I have either hardcore conservative friends from the Marine Corps, or I have hardcore liberal friends from acting and
comedy.
Improv.
Yeah.
And comedy is a different thing. Now, stand-up comedy, on the other hand, I find more people being able to bat around ideas in the middle with stand-up comedy. Because I think with stand-up comedy, we are we have a community to go to, but we have a community where we... you know, we all have independent voices, and we're very tolerant of these independent voices, because
well, at least we should be.
Well, listen, that's what it's supposed to be. That's what it's always been when it comes to comedy. That's why I love comedy, because it was like the Switzerland of saying whatever the fuck you want. You can just get away with whatever, say whatever. So like in the realm of comedy, we have this tolerance of people coming from different walks of life, saying different things. And to us, it's like, go at it, bro. Make that shit funny. I just want to fucking see funny. Say what you got to do to make that thing funny. So to me, stand-up comedians, I find, are a lot less polarized as, say, improvisers are.
Again, improvisers, again, are a part of a group, typically.
That's
again,
what I mean.
So it's groupthink.
It's groupthink. That's what I mean. Like with stand-up comedians, we are on our own. We're lone rangers.
Yes. And also, like Chris Rock had a great quote about it. He goes, a good comedian can argue both sides of an argument. Like, can absolutely tell you both sides of abortion, both sides of, you know, the war of Afghanistan. Because what our job is, a lot of times the great comedians are the ones that start with a concept that is so against what the audience thinks or against what the whole world thinks, and then walks you into it to where you might not agree with it, but at least you see what that person's thinking. Mm. Like the greatest example that I could bring up off the top of my head is when Bill Burr was talking about, like, you know, hey, there's no reason, when they say that there's no reason to hit a woman. Yes, there is. You just don't do it.
And then everyone's like, hey, what do you mean by that? And he explains it and explains it. And people who at the beginning were just like, hey, wait a minute. Were you trying to justify hitting a woman? He's like, no, I'm not saying justify hitting a woman. I'm saying the concept of there's no reason to is wrong. Here's why. And that's what makes comics look at that person and go, wow, that's incredible.
Exactly.
That's what we want. Exactly. Now, on the other hand, you do now have this kind of new thing in terms of comedy is like you talk about, it should be, hey, all ideas are allowed. Now, I do disagree that, like, at least from comedians, it should be, hey, all ideas are allowed. From the world, it's always been, no, stop it. They, you know, censor them. You know, Lenny Bruce and, you know, George Carlin, Richard Pryor, those guys dealt with all sorts of censorship. But now you've got comics that literally go, no, that idea needs to be stopped from even being discussed.
I don't meet those comics.
Well, hopefully you never meet them.
I mean, I honestly
I don't think the I've good
only
ones.
Seen. I've only seen them on Facebook.
Yeah,
the good those ones, are the only ones that I saw. Is like during the pandemic, where those type of people they would like voice those opinions, but they were on Facebook.
I'll be honest.
I never saw it. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I just
in LA, it's funny because people always talk about like, oh, liberal enclaves like LA and New York. I found there was more of that in smaller communities like Pittsburgh and Cleveland and stuff like that, because there's not the promise of the big payday in those places. So they get very woke. They get very kind of like, no, we have to use the proper pronoun because this proves how good a people we are to everyone else in the country, because there's no Netflix specials to have. There's no, you know, there's no meetings with networks here. So we have to kind of become more insular and become more regulatory.
So you're saying it's more so outside of LA?
It's more so in the smaller medium comedy markets. And it might have hit Tony Hinchcliffe in the ass, because he went from a large comedy market in LA, went to Austin, figured like, oh, I'm in Austin, everybody's here. And they were like, no, you're in a smaller pool, and they police themselves, and that's why he got in trouble, because he wasn't used to that.
Did he really get in trouble because
he
of didn't, that?
Okay, he went in the penalty box. He went in the penalty box for 2 minutes.
I think he got in trouble mainly because that comic, like, I don't know.
Yeah, you do.
I went. Me and Jeremy Scipio watched the whole thing. We watched the whole set of Peng Deng.
Yeah, so did I.
Watched that whole set first, so I can get the context.
Yeah,
because I'm sick and tired of like being like riled up over like a snippet of a video, mm-hmm. and then thinking that that's all the truth. You know.
Yeah.
So I sat down and we watched that whole thing, and then leading up into Tony Hinchcliffe's entrance and where he started saying the offensive shit. Right.
Yeah.
In context, I can see now more why he was doing that.
I would say that I watched it as well, and I would say I could see why he did it, but ultimately you can't use the slurs.
I'm saying. So that's the point that I was saying. I can see why he did it. I could see where he was going as a comedian. I could see where he's going with that.
Yeah.
Right?
Poor choice of words.
But even as a comedian, I was like, bro, execution fail.
Yeah.
Execution fail. You could have got you. I swear. Listen, there's a part of me that's like, man, I don't think we should be like, hey, you can't be making that type of accent. Right. Mm-hmm. But the way he used it and how he used it, and considering like the time right now has like there's all this Asian hate that's like in the media and just poor execution. Well, poor execution.
You hit on something like, again, as a
that's all it was. Well, I mean, to me,
as a white male,
but I don't know if that has anything to do with Austin.
Well, I think Austin and smaller comedy markets, they're going to be a little bit more self-policing. They're going to be a little bit more about maintaining a certain level because of the fact that, you know, at least how it was back in Pittsburgh. There was big on if someone said something, it wasn't where you'd let it slide. The room would definitely come up to you and be like, that's not cool. If I hear something like that again, you're banned. That's not it. Because again, it was a lot more like all we have in this world that we have is the fact that we have a safe space for people, because ultimately there's not that many comics. So we can't have this situation where like, okay, well, you know, the woke comics go here and the more, you know, freewheeling comics go here and everything. No, we all had to go in the same place because there's only like one or two places a night you could go. And so it was one of those things to where the hosts in the place would be a lot more self-policing. And I think that might be what Tony kind of hit into of being in a smaller comedy market where it was like, no, we have to defend our turf here and kind of go from there.
Yeah, but is Peng Deng from Austin?
He's from Dallas, I believe. I think he's from Texas.
I don't know, man. I think you know, maybe you're right. I look at it as he no matter where he did that, mm-hmm. Peng Deng posted it online. That's what made it go viral. So yeah. I don't think it matters where you did it.
I've found in smaller markets that they're much more self-policing than in larger markets.
Because, you might be right.
Because in larger markets, there's always the thing of like, all right, if I want to avoid this place, I got 15 other places to go. Right. Or, you know, hey, if this comic is an asshole, then guess what? There's 150, 200 other ones that I can hang out with and never. That's one thing about moving here that like people will say like, oh, you know, I know Dave. And you'd be like, I could do comedy for 2 years, do mics all over the city, never run into Dave. Whereas if you're in a smaller comedy market, you see Dave, you see four or five sets of Daves a week because yeah. There's just not that many.
Right.
And it's an interesting thing in terms of comedy because I think that on one hand, it's like one time Bill Burr said he didn't understand the fact that when somebody would try to get somebody in trouble for a joke they told because he equated it to, oh, this chef made a dish. Why would you try to get the chef fired for making a dish you didn't like? But then somebody said to me, goes, no, the way people view it is they feel that chef is making a dish that could get you killed or make you sick. And so they have to stop it because that dish is poisonous.
Exactly.
And so that's the debate. It's not that, whoa, I disagree with the dish. It's I believe the dish, if consumed by someone, will ultimately make them ill.
God, it's so fucking crazy.
I mean, and
you know, on Clubhouse, I was on a Disappointed today. Which is a you know Leah Lamar?
Yeah,
she has like the hottest like basically virtual comedy club on Clubhouse, and I've been fortunate to be on there. Mm-hmm. You know, but at the same time, it's like today. There's like a show called Disappointed, and people just call in. Or on there, and they get to talk about disappointing sexual moments.
Okay.
Right. And I had 2 minutes to tell a story about how I ordered two white prostitutes.
Okay.
And what showed up was a Chinese girl and a trans woman.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
And as soon as I said trans woman,
yep.
Instantly somebody came in. He's like, just wanted to warn you, don't say anything offensive or we'll report you. Like as soon as I said trans.
Yeah, that I would never go that place again. That's not going to get you any better.
But I kind of understand where they're coming from, because sometimes in these things you have people that would literally come in and be like, hey, we're going to say some fucked up shit about trans people, right? I understand that, but at the same time, it's also very telling of how what matters more to people is not what's right or wrong, but what's popular. What's popular to be right or wrong?
But here's
does that make sense?
Yes, and I would agree. But here's the thing why I would have a tough time ever going back there again, is because in any room that I'm trying to work something out,
yeah,
I need the freedom to fall on my face and know that it's not going to end me. That's when you know you have a good room. Because you sometimes, like, you're going to notice in the next how long we talk, I quote from other people because the reason why you do that is because someone else said it better than you could.
Yeah.
And Bill Maher said one time, he goes, if you're trying to throw a football into tight coverage, sometimes you're going to throw an interception. But that's how you have to win the game. You know, if you just want to dump off passes off to the side, and you're not going to win the game doing that way. You're just going to move the yards. But that's, again,
you got to take chances.
You got to take chances.
You got to break a few eggs.
You got to break a few eggs. You got to try something. Now, the problem, like Chris Rock had the great bit that's still legendary where he was like talking about the difference between black people and N-words. And he sat there and goes, if you listen to that bit 3 months before I recorded it, it made me sound like the most racist person in the history of the world.
Yeah.
But after 3 months of workshopping it, it became a bit that set his career to a different level. Mm-hmm. And so you need a room to where it's like, okay, I'm going to try something here, which is why it's one of those things to where I equated it to what's more fun at an open mic, watching someone trying to jump over like a puddle or someone trying to jump over the Grand Canyon. Because if you want to do the joke about, you know, getting the trans prostitute, you're trying to jump over the Grand Canyon. Now, if you do it, that's some evil Knievel level, holy crap, wow, that's what you pay for kind of stuff. If you don't, at least from an audience standpoint, I see you fall down the Grand Canyon, which is still fun.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing. It's like if you want to be an amazing comic, if you want to be someone, because fundamentally, if you're trying to make if you're trying to make a living at this, what you're trying to do is like someone said to me once, goes, you're competing against the funniest guy at the person's office.
Yeah.
Because you're saying to the world, hey, I'm so good at this. I'm so funny. I'm so inventive. You should pay me and have to drink two drinks in order to see me. That's how good I am. And so when you just try to kind of do like normal, kind of everyday, kind of vanilla crap, that's where you become just very replaceable.
Amen.
And that's why, honestly, I think the industry tries to push you into that.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, that makes you replaceable.
But you know what's funny, man, is that I like to now I kind of want to learn how to navigate that landscape. You know what's funny is like I always look at everything as a challenge.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like I'm not the type of person that or comic that's going to be like, you know what? Fuck this shit. This stuff offends you. I'm just going to keep writing more offensive shit. I'm going to keep writing more offensive shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not even on me. I'm trying to be offensive. It's just how my brain works.
Yeah.
And it's how, you know, things that I find funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with your example. You start off the shit. I have jokes right now that if you first heard of them, you're like, oh, don't ever do that again.
Yeah.
But you figure out a way.
Yeah.
You figure out a nice way or figure out like a nice landing or like or it starts off terrible, but man, it's got like this turnaround misdirection where now there's a lesson or now it's a little more wholesome or whatever the case may be.
How do I enter it? How can I get out of it? How exactly. Something in your life comes into it.
How can I ride this theme but execute it properly?
Yes.
You know? But to me, it's like we just, you're right. We definitely need to make those freaking, take those chances. But like right now, I kind of like looking at it as, hey, can I do an hour clean? Can I do an hour where there's no politics?
Can I do an
hour where I'm not cussing or dropping F-bombs or talking about sex?
I seek out those opportunities. If somebody sits there and says, hey, Mike, I have a room filled with 90-year-olds, you know, at 4 p.m.
Third graders.
Yeah, yeah. Mike, I need you to do 45 minutes. There is a part of you, again, it's the competitiveness that sits there and says, yeah, I want to figure out how I can do it.
Yeah.
I want to figure, I mean, I've done a half hour in a church basement where it had to be literally G. I've done like libraries at 4 p.m. on a Tuesday where they were wheeling in everybody. I've done casinos where I counted that there were 7 people on respirators. You know, I mean, and so you do have to learn those things. Now, I do think that it's a level of narcissism if you go into a room and have absolutely no concern if the people in the room are having a good time.
Mm.
You really, and I think that's one of the things when people sit there and go like, oh, the woke comics or this comic. It really is the narcissistic comics. It's the comics that have no interest in it. Because my thing is, and also if you take the money, if somebody pays you to paint my fence, no, you paint the fence how I tell you. Because if you don't want to paint the fence that way, then by all means, don't accept the money. But if you... what the hell was that?
No. You paint the fence the way I want to paint it, bitch.
Yeah, then don't take the money. Yeah. If you need to paint it and put a saying on it and do all that kind of stuff, great. Don't take the money. Go paint your fence somewhere else. But this is what I need you to do on my fence.
I agree, bro. I think we should definitely, I don't know. I think comedy is going to come back to rock and roll.
It is rock and roll. It's the last rock and roll.
No. I mean, right now it's being culled, right? It's being culled where you can't say this, you can't say that.
See, I think
everyone's on eggshells.
I completely disagree.
I think it's going to come back around where it's going to be super rock and roll real soon, man. Where people are going to be like, come on, just let it, let the hounds loose.
I think in most rooms, it already is that. Because I've said this up countless times. When was the last time a song pissed anybody off? When was the last time a musical artist put out a song that everyone in the, you know, that was sitting there going, oh my God, I can't believe it would have to be WAP or something like that. And even that was just more sexual. But like,
it's usually a sexual
song. Yeah. But like comedians, it's every other day that we say something that makes somebody pissed off. Mm-hmm. We might be the last rock stars. Like, we might be the last people.
I'm not talking about us. I'm talking about I'm talking about the art form right now.
No, I'm talking about me personally. I don't care about
that. Because you're a fucking narcissist.
I know. I'm a narcissist.
All right. Well,
here's the thing, folks. I'm looking straight into the camera. I have never, ever, ever told this man that I'm anything but a giant narcissist with a huge head, both literally and figuratively.
That's the sound of your fucking head shining. All right, so, bro, I know you want to talk about the homeless problem.
I just think that, again, just to give you a little bit of background on me, because that was the first question, originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, did comedy in Pittsburgh for about 6 years, worked up and down like Mid-Atlantic, East Coast, all that kind of stuff, came out to L.A. about a year before the pandemic, work now here in L.A., and in moving out here, I've never seen a place that is as beautiful and as scummy.
Yeah.
In the same, and it's cool that way. It is kind of like that thing, but
it reminds me of Detroit with palm trees.
Yeah.
It's like just Detroit with palm trees.
Oh, I've said this in Axe. I go, Van Nuys is just a sunny Cleveland. That's all.
Okay. That, yeah.
Yeah. That's the vibe.
I like it, to be honest.
Well, I really do.
I like the mixture, because otherwise, if it's too sterile, it would be just too much for me.
But I just feel as though it's like if you could wave a magic wand.
Yeah.
And say, okay, one problem would be taken care of. And would take this city from a 6 or a 7 to a 9 or a 10.
Yeah.
And it's the homeless problem. And it's getting, I mean, like, I go to
I think things, it's the Armenians.
You think it's the Armenians? Just go off on them. They deserve it. Just go off on them.
Yeah. You guys are ruining my dating life, you fucking pieces of shit. You're ruining my dating life. Everyone thinks I'm Armenian. And they're like, oh, no, I've dated you guys before. It's like, you haven't dated a Yemeni. To them, that's just an Armenian.
So. You got to get some people who've taken some geography classes.
So I need to fucking date girls that are not from America.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm from America. I won the geography B in sixth grade, and I know that Yemen and Armenia are two separate countries.
Yeah, but I don't want to fuck you.
Really? That's not why you invited me here?
All right, guys. We're done with the fucking podcast. Me and Rush Limbaugh about the fucking smash, son.
But, okay. Yay. That's what would happen if we smashed. It'd be three people going, oh, yay.
For sure. Our viewership would go way through the roof. This is what everybody's been waiting for. Absolutely. They've been waiting for me to have gay sex.
It's June. It's Pride Month.
Talk about getting canceled.
What are we talking about? We'd be booked everywhere.
Guys, we're going to have to turn off the cameras for a minute.
You should just
turn off the cameras and just do like sounds. Yeah. One of the great bits of all.
Have you ever heard Joe Rogan from one of his first comedy albums? He was like lifting in the basement with this guy, and he was talking about how like gay lifting weights were, and he fucks his buddy in the ass because he was just you find it on in the internet.
Okay,
it's basically like he goes down to the basement and these two bros, and he's sitting there, he's going, yeah,
you want me to play it right now?
Yeah, find it. Yeah, Joe Rogan weightlifting.
Okay.
It's from like that's like from 25 years ago. He probably has taken it off because he doesn't want anyone to see it.
Oh, is it video?
No, it's an audio. It's from his comedy album.
You know, when you type in Joe Rogan weightlifting,
it kind of goes into all that comedy weightlifting. Gay, put gay maybe. Gay weightlifting.
Gay weightlifters?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Let's see here. I don't know if I can play it off of this. Okay, hold on. I'm trying to look for it.
I got you.
Gay weightlifting. Let me see. Gay.
I want this in my search history. Gay weightlifting.
I mean, if you find it, let me know. Mm-hmm. Hold on, this might be it. What? I got to sign in. Go fuck yourself, bodybuilding.com. Piece of shit.
Oh, it's called Getting Pumped.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Joe Rogan Getting Pumped.
Okay. Okay. Here we go.
Yeah. It's supposed to be like a basement.
Hilarious. Yeah.
I won't.
So it's like a skit?
Yeah.
It's so gay. Muscular. Wow. Yeah, bro.
So would back to homelessness. Right, no.
Would that even fly right now, bro? Would it? Would it?
I think it would. Because, again, it's talking about how, like, I'll use the vernacular of today. The cis male is, you know, ultimately rejecting, you know, his homosexual urges and all that kind of stuff. Basically, it's about a bunch of guys who, like, that's why they lift weights so much is because they're ultimately gay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, of course it would fly. Now, the whole, like, that kind of stuff, maybe less sound effects. Like, the redo in 2021 would not have the sound effects.
To me, I didn't like the fact that, like, on that clubhouse, because I started saying a trans woman, that she had to come in. But at the same time, it was like, maybe it was just to make sure that nobody says anything offensive, because a lot of people would say something offensive about trans people without even really knowing sometimes, you know, like saying tranny or like, you know, saying any type of word. Like, for example, I think like sometimes people are not given a chance anymore. Like how many times have you said something racist and didn't know that it was racist? Like gypsy, the gypped, getting gypped. I never knew that that was gypsy.
Really?
Had no idea. I didn't find out until like maybe like a year and a half ago. I just thought it was a thing that you said. It was like you got gypped. Nobody told me it was gypsy. I've never met there were a couple of gypsies that grew up in my neighborhood, but they never schooled me on that. Maybe I never said it in front of them, or I don't know. I just thought it was just a word.
Bill Parcells, who was the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys at the time, was talking about trick plays. And he sat there and he goes, "Oh yeah, we're gonna have a bunch of jap plays ready for him."
What?
And the guy goes, "What? Yeah, exactly. What?" He goes, "You know, jap plays. You know, trick plays. You know, surprise plays." And the guy goes, "You know, that's not good." And he goes, "Oh yeah, you probably right." But for 40 years, he'd been calling trick plays jap plays because of, you know, Japanese and Pearl Harbor and all that other kind of good stuff.
When I was in the Marines, I was a mechanic.
Yeah,
and you know what? The whole time, because diagonal cutting pliers, you know what that is? You know what a diagonal cutting plier is?
If I saw one, I would know it.
It's like a plier?
Yeah.
Just like a plier, but it's sharp.
Yeah.
Just there to cut shit.
Yeah.
Right? Basically like scissors.
Yeah, yeah.
But hard, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for wires and shit. Yeah.
For wire, even something stronger stuff, depending on the size.
Yeah.
They call them dykes. In my platoon, that's as a mechanic, that's what I heard. Dykes. Yeah.
But it had nothing to do with lesbian women.
No, but yeah.
It couldn't have had it. What would cutting pliers have to do with lesbian women?
No, it's just how the Marines in the shop were calling them.
But do you honestly
Instead
think
Instead of calling them diagonal cutting pliers, they called them dykes.
Because that's short for diagonal.
But it also sounds like, I think it's because it also sounds like dykes. I bet you any money that's how it was.
I bet you it predated anyone even realizing that at one point women had sex with other
Well,
women.
But should we fucking research it? No, we shouldn't waste that time fucking searching more
I bet
shit.
You if you Google the diagonal whatever, like there's some Marine Corps historian that would sit there and say in 1845.
Nah, fuck you. No, I don't think so, man, because how's this? When I checked into my first unit, when you're in your first unit, man, you when you're in boot camp, they train you to speak a specific way, right?
Yeah, of course.
The window's the porthole.
Yeah.
The floor is the deck.
Yeah.
The stairwell is now I forgot what it was called.
Yeah.
Fucking a flashlight was a moonbeam. Like they changed the whole lingo. Port side.
Jarhead, like starboard, the movie Jarhead.
Yeah. You know, right. So everything, the whole nomenclature of everything changes in how you speak. So then when you get out of boot camp and then you go check into your first unit, you latch on to everything everyone's saying because you want to make sure you get all the lingo right, right? Yeah. That diagonal plier is called dykes. That's what we're going to call them, dykes. Yeah. Well, first platoon sergeant I had, I forgot his name. It was just some white dude. I forgot his name, man, because I wasn't in that unit for that long. So I checked into the unit. I was probably only in that unit maybe 4 or 5 months before they sent me to another unit.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I had to rig something up,
okay,
he would say N-word rig it.
Ooh.
But that's what he said. And then every other mechanic said the same thing. Hold on a second. So, mind you, I'm just like, okay, that's not a word that I would say.
Yeah.
I never grew up being allowed to say that fucking word or whatever. But while I'm in this unit, if that's what they're going to call it,
yeah,
then I guess that's what I'm going to call it. That's just like that boot Marine mentality. I had no idea.
Well, I mean, again, the whole point of Marines is you're supposed to follow orders. So again, if you're sitting in the middle,
and my superior's calling it that.
Yeah, if you're sitting there in the middle of a, you know, someone's bombing the base, and someone sits there and calls like, "Hey, get me a dike," and you're sitting there going, "Excuse me, I don't believe that that's the, yeah, that, that's well, not, not only what you would that, do.
This
that.
Is like mid '90s, so like at that time, it's like it was one of those times where you would be able to think. And rationalize like, oh, because we're in this unit of Marines, this is okay.
Well, it wasn't okay, but I understand. No, but what I'm saying,
in my mindset, in my boot Marine mindset, that's kind of like how I was like, oh, I guess this is okay. We could say this on the lot, you know, while we're working. That's just what I thought that, whatever called it. Then I had a black platoon sergeant.
Okay. Yeah, the word changed.
No, I said it to him. Because I literally was just
thinking even, that's what it was called.
Not even thinking, bro. Not even thinking. It's 19 years old.
Yeah.
Just, hey, what do I say? What, you know, that's just my whole fucking whatever.
Yeah.
And then he asked me, I remember he like, he's like, how much more time? And he's just like, his name is Sergeant Latham. He's really angry black dude. Like just always fucking yelling at people shit. Yeah. Did you remember Jamie Foxx's character?
Yeah. And Jarhead.
Exactly. That's who Sergeant Latham was. Fucking always just fucking just putting you in your fucking place. Asked me how long it was going to take, and I was like, oh man, I don't know. Maybe about another hour, I got to N-word rig this. He fucking lit a fire under my ass. You know? But it's just one of those things, man, where it's like sometimes people are not being racist. Sometimes it really comes from a place of ignorance, you know? Well, I can see somebody saying tranny and still thinking that that's just a normal thing to call a person.
Again, if you go to certain parts of the world, and see, that's where, if you even go back to the beginning of the whole conversation.
Hey, we got
to
give people chances.
Yeah, well, here's where, again, and this comes back to the whole, you know, it's not black and white. There's a lot of gray in it. It's, okay, if you grew up in a certain world to where that was the word for it, now I would say that you need to be able to go, okay, understand, you understand why that could be deemed as offensive. Yeah. Now, the problem I have is when someone sits there, and this is where you get on like Fox News or somebody on Twitter sits there and goes, oh, why do we have to be so politically correct? Why is it that everybody's trying to be the PC police and everything like that?
Yeah, I have a problem with that.
Where someone sits there and goes, you know, you do need to evolve as a human being.
Right.
You do need to learn. Now, and so that's, but I also do have somebody, if someone does come from a place of just complete ignorance, and they're from a place in the world where that's just where it was, and then all of a sudden somebody just berates them and says, no, you're less of a human being because you said that, instead of going, you understand why that could be viewed as, you know, offensive. So again, there is a level of understanding that needs to happen.
Yeah.
And it's ultimately, I think when it really comes down to is 80% of the people are just like what we're describing. And then the outliers, the 10% on each side, are the people that make the most noise, spend the most time on Twitter, try to get the most attention. And they're the people that ultimately that's why I hate when someone sits there and says, Twitter is ablaze with this. And I go, Twitter isn't real. Most people.
That's exactly how I look at it.
Twitter is not an actual thing. Twitter is a group of people.
That treat that as it's real.
Yeah, it's a completely.
It's really weird.
Social
man.
Media isn't real. Yeah. That's like we're talking about before the show about people taking vacations and all that kind of stuff and going on. But that's what you put on your social media. I put the best foot forward of my social media. I put my shows. I put this great picture of me in stand-up. I put this, you know, this podcast, everything like that. The cool things I'm doing in LA. I'm not putting, you know, going to the grocery store and, you know, and eating a burger at McDonald's. That's not what I'm putting there.
Yeah.
But again, and so everyone else does. People put the best of their stuff on there, but they also put what they feel gets the most attention.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. I think ultimately, we have to realize, and like you said, like, you know, I'm trying to learn what to work in the rest of the world. I found in the rest of the world, when you go into those places, everyone does have their trigger words, but they're a lot more understanding than in a lot of places where they feel that they're much more progressive and woke.
Mm.
They're a lot more stringent and a lot more rigid in places where, like you said, where the person sat there and went, watch what you're saying, and as opposed to just waiting and seeing what you're about to say, as opposed to immediately jumping on
you. I think it's because they just have this rule on there where it's like, you know, don't like be offensive. Don't say offensive shit like that. Don't hurt other people's feelings.
Again, and I'll quote Rush Limbaugh. In your head? How do I know what's offensive? Okay, saying like if you go into a comedy show in LA.
I know where you're coming from. I'm right there with you, bro.
Yeah.
But the landscape has changed and these people are acting within that minefield right now. Like these are people that are on Clubhouse that are moderating it and they're just basically trying to warn me.
Yeah.
Like, hey, be careful because you could get reported.
But let me ask you a question. If you, instead of saying something about transgender people, started making fun of religious people.
Yeah.
Do you think they would have said anything?
Well, here's the thing. No, I think that if I would have said something about religious people, if I would have said blah, 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 religious people.
Yeah.
And then I'm about to say something.
Yeah.
I don't think they would jump on it as much as trans, because I think trans is a thing where you will get a lot of nonchalant verbal hatred towards.
But this is
and unsolicited and coming out of nowhere, sometimes ignorant, you know, sometimes not knowing enough. I think that, you know, when I talk to my trans friends, a lot of them don't like traveling alone. They want to make sure that they're with other people because, you know, somebody could just see a trans person and be like, you know, like to someone who hates gay people, they would look at a trans person as even more of
everyone should feel safe and everyone should be respected as a human being. But again, going back to that situation, that's going back to what I said about the people in central Pennsylvania. They're like, okay, well, these people get protected and we have to walk on eggshells. But if we're going to make fun of what I believe and what I am, and I believe in, you know, Muhammad or Jesus Christ or whatever, it's open season on my beliefs and who I am as a person.
Right.
But other people get protected. And that's where you get the chasm, because that's where, like, again, the politicians who want to prey on those people will sit there and say,
I'm
the one who's going to protect you because they are against you.
I think this goes back to what I said earlier. People don't care to fight for what is right.
Mm.
They care to fight for what is right now.
Yeah.
Meaning, you know, right now, the thing that you really, really should be standing up for is like trans rights, right? Or Black Lives Matter, right? Stop Asian hate, right? Free Palestine, you hate Jewish people. That's it. Like now, that's where we're at. Like we're at this thing where it's like it's always been like that, where it's like as a liberal, especially, there are a set of things you are allowed to talk about, and then there's a set of things you're not allowed to talk about until it's ready to be okay to talk about.
Well, see, that's where...
Make sense?
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
I agree with everything you're saying, but here's where I have the problem is that's why we have the chasm we have, because people don't talk because, and I've said this to people who go into different rooms, everybody's got their trigger words. Everybody's like, people sit there and they go, oh, we're so on PC. Yeah, well, don't say anything about Jesus Christ in that room. Okay. Don't say anything about certain politicians. But if you walk into another room, you can say anything you want about Jesus Christ, but don't say anything about these protected groups.
So basically, your point is that every group has their, you can't say this.
Yeah. Thing. And so no one...
Or don't talk about this.
Don't talk about this. Don't talk about that. Everybody has their thing. And that ultimately, from a comedian standpoint, those are the juicy parts.
Yeah.
Because those are like, oh, that's your sacred cow. You know, sacred cows taste the best. They make the tastiest burgers.
Yes.
So, I mean, yes. Yeah. And that's what
or
we
not,
do.
Or not. I don't know.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah. Let's grill up some. No.
Let's go to Cambodia.
Let's go to Cambodia. Wherever sacred cows are there. Now... Ultimately, another sacred cow is, like we talked about before in Los Angeles, is the homeless population. So I think here is, just to get down to the nitty gritty, what do you believe these people are owed? Because on one side, you have maybe the most right-wing people who say everyone has free will, these people are breaking the law. If they're camping, they shouldn't be camping, arrest them or get them out of here. There's that end. Then you have the complete other end, which is people who believe that we should be building them beautiful cottages wherever they want to be built. And that's where we have the issue, because I think no one knows no one can answer the question of what exactly are these people owed? Because I even think I sent you a video of
I'm sharing a screen right now of the Los Angeles Times headline.
Yeah.
You know, beach apartments for homeless people. Venice residents are leery. So basically, this is just pointing out how the Venice, the city council, that you call it or whatever, the government in Venice is instead of telling these homeless people who are now camping on the beach and, you know, causing an eyesore for people who actually pay taxes in the area and have
and hurts homes businesses and hurts businesses.
Well, a building ended up catching on fire, and they think it's because of one of those tent camps. But my point is that what this article is basically saying is, instead of the government doing what they're supposed to be doing according to how the people there feel, getting those tents out of there and making it illegal, instead they're trying to do the nice, uber cushy snowflake liberal thing, and that is, well, maybe we should just build housing for them. And from what I was reading further, there's like this whole architect that's creating it, and he's known for creating like dystopian-esque type like ugly buildings that have no character and feel like it's like a, like if you sliced a part of the Death Star and like put it in Venice. So not only is the architect someone who fucking makes really shitty stuff according how the people there feel, that's where they want to put the homeless people, or at least create cheaper housing, more affordable housing.
Well, again, back to this, and again, this is the question. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But here's the question that just keeps on going through my head, and ultimately I change my idea like literally 3 or 4 times a day.
Right.
Because it, like from an outsider's perspective, you're sitting there going, I think I just lost.
No, you're okay. You're okay. Okay. Just don't worry about it. It's still working. I'm just fixing this for me. Okay.
So on one hand, like there's people that believe that they deserve nothing. I feel, again, back to I'm in the middle. I don't know if we should be building them cottages, but I think they need shelter. But on one hand, there's people who sit there and say, no shelters, don't do anything. But on the other hand, someone says, oh, these people are, you know, they deserve, it's a human right for this. But I'm like, but they also, they need to get off drugs. They need to get mental health. They need to kind of take a little bit of initiative. And if they don't, they're going to just be in the same position for the rest of their lives.
I was talking to Rachel D the other night, and she had to correct me. You know Rachel D?
Yeah.
Comedian Rachel D. She had to correct me. Like I was passing around the whole trope of like, you know, homeless people love to come to liberal areas.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to shut me down and be like, Mike, the vast majority of homeless people in Los Angeles used to have a roof in Los Angeles. Do you know anything about that? Because that's how she poised it that way. She said it's more of a lot of it's mental health, but a lot of it is also people not being able to, or getting kicked out of their homes, or not being able.
Well,
to.
Well, I think again back to the Los Angeles,
the shortage of affordable housing.
Well, that comes back to like where we're from. There's places in Detroit and there's places in Western Pennsylvania where what would have happened with a lot of these people would be they would have gotten some disability payments.
Yeah.
And they could afford a roof over their head with their disability payments, and they'd be out of sight, out of mind in a, you know, quote unquote bad neighborhood, and they wouldn't be homeless, but they'd be in a less desirable place. Whereas like there's $5, $10, $20 million houses in Venice. Like you go through Hollywood and it's one of the things that's just so, especially from where we're from, that's so weird, because you'd be driving down and you'll be seeing a homeless encampment, and then in the background a luxury condominium complex where each one of those condominiums are a couple million dollars.
Yeah.
And that's where, but on the other hand, you have a situation where it's like, well, of course you want to live in Venice. Of course you want to wake up every morning and see the beach. Well, I don't have the money to do that. That's why I live in Burbank. That's where I can afford. I love to be someday successful in comedy and have a beachfront Malibu house.
Helicopter.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is, at this point, we don't have that.
Yeah.
And so, again, that's why it's so tough, because it's one of these things of, again, what do these people deserve from us? Because, and that's, well,
I mean, let me pose the question, man. Like, you know, I mean, do you think that, I don't know, like, what, how do we strike the balance? Because, you know, there's a part of me that literally feels that, like, I understand where these liberals are coming from, especially in Venice, where they're like, hey, you know, these people deserve, right now I'm playing like this long video of some guy just walking through Venice, and it's like ridiculous. To be honest, I had no idea this is how bad it was.
I have avoided it in the last 2 years.
I haven't been to Venice in a minute, to be honest. I love going there, though, by the way.
But here's the thing. Why we avoid going there is the reason why, if I'm a business owner, I'm sitting there going, wait, I have a t-shirt shop there, and people are avoiding it because of these situations.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you're right. There's one thing where it's just like, okay, we need affordable housing options. Where are you going to put affordable housing options on the west side of Los Angeles, which is the highest end real estate on the planet? So, I mean, that's it. That's the issue, because like somewhere someone says, well, let's put them in another part of Southern California. Again, you put them in some places in Southern California away from public transit. You put them away from this. They become isolated, all this kind of stuff. So that's why this is such an incredibly difficult problem. But I also understand why someone who has a $10 million house in Venice doesn't want someone building the Death Star next to their house, taking down their $10 million investment.
Exactly. Fuck, bro. I mean, I don't know, man. Like, there's a part of me that just thinks that, you know, maybe the government in Venice has a fucking point. Maybe there's got to be a way to, like, create housing for these people. What do you do with the people that have mental health problems, man? I mean, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of that happened after Reagan, right?
Well, Reagan essentially, according to what I've read, shut down a lot of the mental health facilities in California. Because, again, what you could do is, you know, I'm doing a Van Halen album, 5150 them, where you could basically get them the mental health, but then those beds have been taken away because the money was taken away, the funding was taken away. Now, the other thing is that I've explained to a lot of people is, like, if you look at how many people live here, like, the thing that strikes you about L.A. as opposed to, let's say, a place like New York, is in New York, everything's vertical. Or here, it's like two or three stories because you want to see the sky and you want to see the beach. You want to see it. But
I love that.
And it's beautiful. But a problem is like, okay, if you want to build housing in an area where there's already housing, you got to go up. So you're going to build these giant apartment complexes.
And that's what a lot of people in Venice don't want.
Exactly.
Nobody in California wants that, exactly. To be honest.
Which is why I think maybe...
That's what I like about California. I'd rather be seeing the palm trees up in the...
Which is why I think maybe the answer is where, like, I read an article where they said places like downtown LA, downtown Burbank, downtown Glendale, where there's already bigger buildings, you can get them zoned easier as opposed to there.
How do you convince taxpayers of any area to allow housing for super low income people who can barely pay rent or were homeless? Yeah. How do you convince that? Because to be absolutely honest, as much as I want to help the homeless, if I buy a home out here, I'll be damned if one of those things have to pop up, because I know how people look at it. People will look at it and it might bring property values down,
and
it may ruin the area a little
bit. Well, and this is the thing that people, especially back in Pittsburgh,
and
don't
I hate
understand.
Saying that, because there's a part of me that just goes, there's a liberal in me that goes, those are humans.
Yes.
You know, what the hell is wrong with you?
Yes.
And the economy's fake.
Yep.
And all of these, like, stipulations, these guidelines,
but
and everything.
But an average house out here, an every man house out here, you're spending close to $1 million.
No, you could pay about $500,000.
Okay. I'm talking, you know, if you want to live in Burbank.
Closer, yeah, you're
about, right, you live in Burbank. Yeah, you live in parts of, you know, like Glendale. Yeah, you live in everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The house that I currently live in that I'm renting, if it was on the market, could probably get close to $1 million.
Mm.
And even the places you're talking about that are $500,000, I've talked to some people that are starting to buy there. Now they're worried in those places, you know, those places are, you know, you're getting the gentrification word, because they're buying up the houses at $500,000, fixing them up and telling the people that, hey, can't afford the $1 million house in Burbank, hey, now you can afford a $650,000, $700,000 house in this area. Now you're going to be pricing people out of those areas because they don't have $750,000, $800,000 to buy these.
And then the rent's going to go up.
And the rents are going to. Well, like in Inglewood, when they built the new Rams stadium and they're building the Clippers' new arena, literally as soon as they put the shovel in the ground for the Rams facility, rents doubled in certain places.
Bro, I was almost going to buy land out there. I was just too busy doing other shit, man. I was about to fucking. Because I invest in real estate in Detroit and Michigan. Yeah. Ugh, I wish I would have jumped on it.
Yeah. I mean, because that's going to be a growth area because, again, you're going to have two new arenas.
Yep.
You're going to have new the big thing here in L.A. is 2028. It's the Olympics.
Yeah.
Everything, if you read, it's almost hilarious if you read any proposal for eliminating homeless, for more public transit, everything ends in 2028. L.A. is going to be an incredibly busy place in 2027 because everything is 2028. But that's the thing. Everyone wants to put the best foot forward when the whole world shows up here in 2028.
Yeah.
And, you know, and now the Super Bowl is going to be here in Inglewood next year. It's going to be here probably every 3 to 4 years. They're going to start having bowl games. When the Clippers build their new arena, they're going to want, you know, obviously that's going to bring more concerts.
You're giving me anxiety about not fucking investing in there, bro.
I'm sorry. You know, you're too late. You know, what am I going to tell you? Some people best in invest in Google, you know, 10 years ago. Some people did it last week. I don't know what to tell you.
So you wanted to talk about what it means to be liberal or conservative.
I think that was pretty much
problem solving.
I pretty much was. That was the first half hour of the show.
Oh, really?
I mean, that was pretty much what it was.
Yeah.
Because the whole point was like when I read, and I understand why you say it because it's just like a funny thing to say, liberal Rush Limbaugh. And I always sit there and kind of go like, I don't know how liberal I am because like you have these thoughts about like, because when I see some homeless guy tripping and, you know, taking a piss in the middle of the highway, I sit there and go, why isn't a cop taking that guy in? And I feel that that's not a very liberal thought. And no, that's a thought that I have because I'm like, hey, where are the cops right now? But then on the other hand, then you do have the thought of like, well, you know, that person.
Why can't you be liberal and also be like, hey, bro, get this guy out of here?
See, that comes to a point to where, like, Bill Maher was talking about that he had, like, in his house out here in California, he was trying to get solar. You think about, like, how liberal he is. I'm going to go solar. I'm going to be whatever. It took him, like, 5 years or something ridiculous to get all of the permits and all that other kind of good stuff. And his point was these are the kind of things that make people believe that liberals can't govern. So it's one of those things to where sometimes when you're the government, you have to sometimes be a dick because it's just like, hey, I'm trying to manage a city of 5 million people. And if you're going to be like, I was driving here. And if you're on the 101, you see people building tents along the highway and there's no fencing. And I'm just like, some guy has a bad dream and slips off onto the highway and gets run over by a semi.
Yeah.
Like it could easily happen.
Yeah.
And I bet you it does. It just kind of goes like, oh, well, you know,
yeah.
It's too early in the morning. It's just kind of get a cleanup crew out there.
But how about this whole fucking Reagan's, the guy who tried to shoot Reagan, John Hinckley? He rebrands himself.
Yeah, he's trying to be a singer.
As a songwriter?
Yeah. Can we play a little bit of his soon, see if he's got any talent?
I mean, I got that video you sent.
Yeah.
That kind of like breaks down like what's...
He's trying to rebrand his life.
He's what?
Trying to rebrand his life instead of not being the man who tried to murder Ronald Reagan to impress Jodie Foster, he's now trying to become the voice of a generation.
So what's the I didn't get a chance to read that article. What's the controversy
over the guy who shot Ronald Reagan?
Well, no, I know that, but about this guy trying to, because I was reading a little bit and it said something about how he just won some type of lawsuit that allowed him to make music.
Yeah, there were people that were trying to keep him off YouTube because it was like, hey, this is the guy who shot Ronald Reagan. He's going to say weird stuff because he shouldn't be allowed on YouTube. And he's like, no, I'm just singing Elvis songs. I should be allowed on there. And now they're letting him on. They allowed this guy on and not Trump. So
let's fucking check it out, bro. Hold on a second. Fuck out of here. This is the shit you want to show us, bro?
Yeah, why not? How many times do you hear, did Lee Harvey Oswald ever really release an album?
I've never done a show this late before, man.
Okay.
This is fucking weird. Oh, here we go. This is the video. Here we go.
This is the majesty of love.
Is this a Elvis song?
I don't know.
I don't listen to Elvis like that. So basically it's saying John Hinckley is writing and performing original love songs.
Would you go see
He's 66, who tried to kill the president, Reagan, back 35 years ago. He has been uploading surreal videos to his YouTube.
You telling me in an L.A. club, if I told you that the guy who tried to kill Ronald Reagan was playing, you wouldn't come with me and go listen to him play music?
I would come for sure.
This guy could tour.
I don't even like this music, but I just want to be there for it.
Of course. Like, that's the whole, that's the thing about this guy.
You especially imagine, in L.A.
How many people hate Reagan? This guy would, it's like, hey, I tried to kill him.
Oh, my God. Everyone, oh, my God. He would get his name on the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
They should just put his name on the Comedy Store right now.
Dude, if he showed up and did Kill Tony, like back in the day, he'd kill.
Did you send this to me? Survey says nearly half of all Americans think dinosaurs still exist.
Yeah, I sent you that too.
What the fuck is this?
Exactly what it read. A half of Americans, when surveyed, said they believe dinosaurs still exist.
Still exist.
Still exist. 2021, there's still dinosaurs somewhere in the world.
No, dude, I'm not believing this shit. Where are you getting this fucking barstoolsports.com?
What, it's a reputable news agency?
Or is it?
Is it?
Is it?
Is it?
Is anything?
Is anything? Yeah, you know what? Now we're just going to be like, we got to check Newsmax and check like...
Bro, I think what we need to wait for, we need to wait for AI to take over. I think AI is going to hopefully... I hope we get like AI fact checking machines, like something that's like something that we can trust.
That's a little too Terminator-esque. That way you want the machines to control what we believe is true. What if someone controls
the
machine?
I'm not saying control. I'm saying that everyone would have their own AI that works to the benefit of you.
You like, okay, do you truly, okay, you've toured, you've been to other places. Would it shock you if 50% of Americans believed, if someone said to an average American, somewhere in the world, there are still dinosaurs?
Okay.
Would you believe that 50% said yes?
No.
Really? I believe completely that 50% of Americans believe that they're, because if you paint the question of somewhere in the world.
This question should be asked, where they fucking asked the people? Like, were they in fucking Tennessee? Like if you did it in California, do you think half the people in California would believe dinosaurs still exist?
I've been out into the hinterlands of California.
Hinterlands. Explain. The fuck is a hinterland?
Not in the major metropolitan areas. Out in the boonies.
This is the whitest word ever, bro. No person of color is going to say hinter. Is it H-I-N-T?
You know what? You turn that racial. Not me.
Bro. I'm just saying, how do you spell this thing? Hinter?
Hinterlands. Google hinterlands.
H-I-N-T-E-R?
Yeah, lands.
Hmm.
Did it come up?
Of course it's going to come up.
Of course it did.
A region lying inland.
Yeah.
From a coast.
Yeah.
I've never used the word hinterland.
Well, again, this is why you hang out with me, to become a more learned person.
To be more white.
Learn it. I said learn it.
This is what you're fucking
See,
saying.
See, you turned it this all
exactly
racial. He turned it all
what
racial.
These white people
look
do,
at this. Look
bro.
At this racial charged person.
They do that on purpose. Don't. This is why I'm here. I'm here to teach you the ways, bro. We didn't have credit
that.
Until you motherfuckers showed up.
I did not say that. I said learned. There are several learned people of color in the world, and they use the word hinterlands a ton.
Learned colored people.
Yep. People bro. Of color. People of color.
Bro.
I said people of color. You're getting so high right now. It's when you get high, you get more woke.
Wow. Even me not being as woke, I'm kind of like, how did you do that, bro? Actually, I'm joking. I don't give a shit.
It's learned. It's how you become learned.
That sounds racist coming from your mouth.
What, learned?
Yeah. Is that it's a real not, word?
Yes. Man. Google learned.
Hinterland and learned.
Learned. Oh, a learned oh, person.
That just sounds like you're talking down to us.
Bro. Oh, of course I am. But say learned. Google learned.
I'm not doing it.
Do it.
Hinterlands.
You already did hinterlands.
I'm going to start using hinterlands. That's a funny word.
Exactly.
Shut up.
Learned.
I know what learned means.
Bro. Okay. Then why did you have to claim that I was being somehow racist by using the word?
I only hear it from fucking white people.
but there are several learned people of all races. And I bet you they use it. I learned it from a person who was of not white.
This is fake. Fake news.
I met my friend Jared, who was not white, and I said, "Hi, Jared, my friend." And he goes, "Hi, Mike. Would you like to become a learned person?" I went, "Sure."
That's not what he said. It's a fake ass. No one talks like that, bro.
He said, "Golly gee, Mike, you need to become a learned person.
You need to be more learned."
Yep.
Are you good at fucking it?
Fucking it?
Yeah. Yo, what up, Hercules? Hercules just showed up.
Is Hercules learned?
Hey, Hercules, we want to know, are you learned?
Are you a learned person?
Doesn't it sound racist when somebody says learned? Anyways, the hinterlands. So, you're just kidding.
I'm saying in the hinterlands, there's a good chance that a wide array of people, 50% of them, if you pose the question somewhere in the world, because the way a person would think is, hey, I haven't been to the whole world. I've only been to like maybe 5 states. I've maybe only been to like 3 of the 6 Flags amusement parks. There's a good chance somewhere in the world that there's dinosaurs still.
I don't know why that scares the fuck out of me, bro.
It doesn't scare me. I believe that I know people.
I would if I were to guess, I would say I would have said 15-20%. 15 is probably what I would have leaned on. 15% of all people in America would think that dinosaurs still exist.
Somewhere in the world. If you went up to...
Oh, you mean there's somewhere in the world, people?
That's how they... No. Let's go to the Glendale Galleria. Let's go to the Sherman Oaks Galleria, whatever they call that, and go up to 100 people and pose the question, hey, friend... Do you believe somewhere in the world there's still dinosaurs? I bet you 50 of them would possibly go somewhere in the world. Maybe. Possibly. I haven't been the whole world. That's how they would say it. It's all how you pose the question. That's one thing about like I talked to a person who did surveys, and that's how you can do what's called a push-pull. You could make it to where if you want people, like if you want like to make people look stupid, you can by how you ask the question. So you sit there and say, somewhere in the world, which you have not visited the most of, like in the deepest recesses of the ocean, is there a possibility that there's a dinosaur? You'd be like, yeah, there's a possibility. Ha ha, you believe dinosaurs exist. I'm putting you in the moron category. Well, yeah.
I mean, who knows? They might be posing the question that way. But at the same time, that is just, listen, that depresses me if that is real. But then again, guys, Barstool Sports.
Exactly. The most trusted news name.
I'm going to knock you the fuck out. I'm going to knock you the fuck out, dude. So this other thing you sent me is investigative journalism at its finest.
Yes.
Danish reporter conducts an interview while having sex.
That's right.
For a feature at a swingers club.
That's right. And there's there's audio of it. Do you want to hear Danish people fucking?
Yeah. Is that the link that's over here?
Yeah. You go into the video, go to 115 or something like that. You start hearing Danish people doing the nasty.
Oh, yeah, bro. Where did you come across this? Barstool Sports?
Yep. The most trusted news name in America.
I don't know about this money. It's fucking New York Post. Can we trust the New York Post?
I think they're New York's in the name, so why not?
Oh, my God. Hilarious. Okay. Let's see what's going on here. Warning, explicit content. Is that her coming?
That's how she comes.
Is that sound? Doot, 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 doot. But it's basically,
by the way, the Danish, when they're having sex, they not sound great.
Danish journalist reportedly recorded an audio of herself having sex with a man while she was interviewing him at a swingers club.
Like, everyone's doing, like, the report.
So she was interviewing him at a swingers club.
So what happened was, it was the beginning of, like, hey, the pandemic's over, everyone's having more fun, so I went to a swingers club. And instead of just reporting at the swingers club, the Danish reporter sits there and says, hey, If I'm at the Swingers Club, let's do some real investigative journalism. Let me have sex with a guy and interview the guy while he's inside of me, having the Danish tickler or whatever they call it over there.
And how did the people there, the Danes, you would call them?
Mm-hmm. How did they react?
Yeah.
They gave her the Peabody Award. They gave her an award for investigative journalism.
Yeah, bro. I need to go there, man. Why am I going to Southeast Asia where they don't like brown guys? I should be going to...
to the Danish.
Damn, bro. Mm. So then she... Wow.
She's nice looking, too.
Yeah. Did they interview the guy? Does the guy come out?
No, they just talk to the guy while he's banging.
She said, warning, it got hot and wet for both our reporter and the guests. This is insane. The fucking music sucks.
Of course, it's Danish.
Yeah. Well, no, this is New York Post, bro.
No, it's from the Danish people. That's where they got the video.
Not the beat. That beat is just from what the New York Post posted. Okay. But then, like, we only heard her, like, moan for a... Whatever.
Go to in minute 115, I believe, is when they start interviewing each other, Danish having sex.
But the thing is, I'm like, I went to that link... And it took me to, hold on. Is there another?
Should be a video.
Hvor meget eller hvor lidt påklædt skal man være?
Det bestemmer man selv.
Hvor man går helt nøgen
rundt?
Ja.
Okay. Det er der faktisk mange, der gør.
Hvor går grænsen?
Lingerie. Det skal være frækt. Du må godt have lak og læder og latex. Og
I can't tell which is the man and which is the woman.
I think she's talking to another woman at this point.
I soveværelsen.
They get to it.
Kan du bo i en svingeklub?
There you go.
Okay.
Du har tænkt dig at godt kunne prøve.
Ja.
Og han er sagt.
Hvorfor det? Jeg kan lige fortælle, hvad du ser lige nu.
Slag, slag, slag.
It sounds like she got no ass, bro. I'm not hearing any.
It's Danish.
She got no ass, bro.
What are you going to do? And then interviews are wild. Like, they're slurking, they're sneaking, they're freaking.
The interview's happening right now?
Yeah.
Hilarious.
They're slurking, they're slurking.
And they gave her the Peabody.
They gave her the Peabody Award for the greatest reporter in the history of the Danish people.
How do you feel about that? Do you think it's stupid?
Honestly, I think I always respect countries that understand that sex. I would rather see more sex on TV than more like guys getting their heads blown off. Because, like, if you watch, like, network television, they show people getting murdered all the time.
You know what my idea about that is?
What is your
the
idea?
Reason why, like, we're okay with showing violence but not showing sex?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because sex is more plausible than violence. And then I think that, like, you have a lot of parents who have these old world mindsets that we still have, like, embedded in our DNA, where it's the idea is that if you show sex to children, that's a more plausible thing for them to engage in,
mm-hmm,
than blowing somebody's brains out. Does that make sense? So, like, the idea of, like, your kid watching somebody get their brains blown out, like, to all of us is, like, less likely that that kid is going to be like, oh, yeah, that's something I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. So we can watch that and be, mm-hmm, like, oh, okay. Obviously, Timmy, you're not going to do that, right? But if you showed sex... Now you're increasing the chances of them wanting to engage in that probably a lot sooner than they should.
You know what? That's a great point. I've never actually thought of that. You sound like a learned person right there. That's the kind of level that you just spoke at.
You're a fucking Nazi. You're a Nazi now.
I'm an Irishman. How can I be a Nazi? No.
So you know how I take that and be like, this brown guy with the fucking baseball cap. Are you serious? Wow. No. He was actually smarter than he looks.
No, why would I be on your podcast if I didn't think that you were a learned person?
Oh my God. Every time you fucking say that, bro, I just want to knock you the fuck out, bro. You're a piece of shit, man.
I'm a wonderful human being.
No, you're a fucking turd is what you are.
I do like fucking turds. I thought is that what the name of the Danish people are? The turds?
Are they?
Fucking the turds.
They're not the Kurds, they're the turds.
That's a terrible group of people.
The enemy of the Kurds.
So the turds. Yeah, the turds versus the turds.
Oh, man. Toiletistan.
Toiletistan
is where they fight.
Toiletistan. Oh, that's a stinky place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's fucking... That was fucking hilarious, bro. Okay, man. Maybe I should be going to Barstool more.
I don't know.
I did a morning show, and this is what I used to do. You'd find these things.
That's why I wanted to have you on, man, because I knew that this was going to be pretty interesting. And, like, I mean, listen, bro, you know. Hey, the last time we talked, I remember you weren't we were talking about relationship shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah.
How you feeling about that?
About relationships?
Yeah.
I got to get one.
You want to get one?
Not really.
You don't, huh? Because last time we talked, you said, no, you don't fucking.
Well.
Last time we spoke, if you don't mind talking about this.
Well, I mean, we can dabble. I mean, I'll be. It's one of those things to where I'm at in my life.
Yeah.
I'm so driven because, again, I drop my entire existence in my hometown. I go across the country and I'm now in the entertainment capital of the world. Mm-hmm. And there's so many opportunities to advance and try to get that brass ring when it comes to entertainment. Mm-hmm. And it honestly relates to the last thing I sent you with it, which is the Anthony Bourdain documentary, mm-hmm. in which, if you guys remember Anthony Bourdain from the TV show, I think it was like the travel show in which
he had a whole bunch of Parts Unknown.
Parts Unknown, all this kind of stuff. And you'd think this guy who went from a cook all the way to hosting his own travel show would be somebody that is living the life. Like he's, oh my God, I was a person that was making, you know, dirt wages and all this kind of stuff. But then in the second half of my life, I lived this incredible life traveling the world. He had like, you know, I had beers with the president in Vietnam. He had all these kind of stuff, but he ended up killing himself because he was, you know, there was something missing and he felt that the only thing he could do was, you know, to end it all. And that's, again, if you're talking about like what's going on in my head is like, yes, I want to, you know, obviously we all are people that love to couple. We're all people that want to find someone that understands us and wants to, you know, be there and be our partner in this world. But on the other hand, you're sitting there going, what kind of partner would I be right now when I'm trying to, you know, conquer the world of comedy and entertainment and podcasts?
I'm trying to pull up this article. Is there a video in it?
Yeah, it's just the trailer for the documentary. The same guy who did the Mr. Rogers documentary did this, and he talked about the fact that the guy was just was always trying to, you know, move forward and try for new challenges. And when he'd get home, he'd be like, "Yay, I'm home! But when am I leaving again?" And all this other kind of stuff. He was just always searching. And it was one of those things to where if you just continue to search, at some point do you get desperate and say, there's no point in all of this and maybe I should just kind of get out of here. I don't know.
Wow, that's interesting.
And again, like
that kind of place to like be in a stand-up.
Well, that's the thing about, again, this world that we've chosen is there's always that next level. There's always that new thing. And everyone's always, you know, oh, this guy's going to this club, or this guy got passed at this thing, or this guy got this agent, or this guy got this. And then you're always like, well, then I got to get that, or I got to do this, or I got to get that. And, you know, and I think that's why, like, when they talk about, like, well, dating's hard in Los Angeles, the reason why dating's hard in Los Angeles is it's a city filled with people that decided not to settle, decided to go for the brass ring. And so if you're in a place where everyone's trying to go for the brass ring, you know, no one's here to kind of
fuck's trying to get brass.
Yes,
bro.
Yeah,
gold,
the platinum.
Yeah,
yeah, the greatest ring.
Platinum actually fell in price.
So. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry for Jim Platinum.
What the fuck is Jim Platinum?
I always make up that there's a guy that owns everything, and he's just like Lou Platinum.
Right.
You know, hey, Lou Glass, Ed the, or I always say the guy who owns like the color green. Like someone owns the color green.
I want to see this. Are you saying this trailer is something we should watch? Or
eventually, I don't know how great it would be on a podcast format, but it's just like it's just it. But again, going back to the whole, you know, relationship thing, I mean, that's what's going through my head right now. Is like, yeah, if I meet the great person that I want to be with, that's wonderful. But on the other hand, I don't know what kind of partner I would be right now because I'm just so focused on like, oh, I got to hit multiple mics and I gotta write this and I gotta be this and I gotta do that and I gotta work here and all this other kind of stuff.
I think it's you could still balance it out if someone's also equally as busy.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing.
Or understands. Gets it.
I think they have to have their own thing.
That's the key. They gotta. It's almost like in this situation. I mean, the joke is they. Oh, if you never see each other, you never get tired of each other, kind of deal.
Yeah.
But if they're equally driven in their thing and you're equally driven in your thing, then yeah. you kind of, then you meet in the middle and have a fun thing.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't actually really found like the girl to actually like make a real relationship, because I think like, you know, not that my standards are too high. Listen, it's not about like looks or anything for me. It's like integrity and those important things, like integrity, trust, you know, someone who can like, you know, you can really trust what they're going to do. They have consistency, self-reflection, the ability to look deep inside themselves and be like, oh shit, I do got to fix this thing, or stop passing the buck, stop deflecting, no gaslighting, that type of shit, which is there's an abundance of that shit.
Yes.
It's an abundance of everything I just listed right now, you know, of that negative stuff. It's like that integrity and trustworthy, someone you could trust. It's hard to find, bro, you know? Or maybe it's you just got to get over it and find somebody and just deal with their shit, which I can't, you know? Like if somebody's disrespecting me, it's just hard.
Okay, what do you mean disrespecting you?
Lying.
Oh, you can't deal with lying.
Yeah, that type of shit. Deflecting.
Give me a deflection. What do you mean by deflecting?
Deflecting, saying that, let's say you're in a relationship with someone and then they wrong you.
Like, yeah.
They did something wrong.
Yeah.
They disrespected you. They lied or whatever it was that was to you, hey, this is something I got to bring up.
Yep.
You did X, Y, Z.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of them listening and taking that in, they deflect and go, you also do XYZ. Remember this one time? And then next thing you know, you're defending yourself about this one time that this happened, that she never brought up or they never brought up, because guys do this too.
Yeah.
But I only date girls, you know, that type of shit, to where it's like now you're trying to find closure on this problem that you're having with this person that you're supposed to have respect with.
Mm-hmm.
But they got too much of a easily bruised ego to where they can't just accept that. Instead, they want to deflect it and change the story and talk about something else. And then at the end of that, you'll always find out with that these type of people where they you'll never actually get closure.
No.
And they don't give a fuck. They're just glad that they don't have to fess up to what they did.
Well, again, the hardest,
and that's disrespectful.
The hardest thing to do in this world is to deal with your own shit, is to really deal with your things. And I'll be first to say, I've only even really started to. Like, I know it's weird to say at 44 years old to say that, oh, I'm just starting the journey of really dealing with who the fuck Mike Sasson is. But I really am being honest. I kind of just am. Because for years, that's the thing about, like, we fill our lives with such just noise that we can just live our entire existence with ever actually analyzing who the fuck we really are.
Yeah.
And one thing, if you sit there and say, okay, what did you do during the pandemic? It really was because there was less opportunities. There were less things to kind of fill the void. You really had to kind of sit there and be like, okay, who is the authentic me,
right?
And what do I want, and what do I actually want to be? Now, it did actually, in my opinion, help me comedically, because it helped me become a more authentic comic,
right?
And be less afraid, because I now have the ability to do it. Because I think sometimes when I ever see a comic, especially when they first start out, and they'll talk about, like, you know, they'll sit there and they'll just skim the subject of something. Like, you know, some comic will talk about, like, oh, but the last three girlfriends I had all cheated on me and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, why? What was it about you?
Yeah.
What was it about what you said? What was it about what you did?
For sure.
Because it's really easy to sit there and say, oh, the world around me is absolutely. Because I always love it when, like, you have some person who will go on Facebook and talk about, like, this person ghosted me and that person ghosted me. And I'm like, okay, there's only one person that's involved in all of those situations.
You. Right.
And you've got to deal with the person of, I remember one time I was talking to this was back home, and I was talking to this girl, and she was talking about, like, yeah, I had this one boyfriend who cheated on me, and then I had one boyfriend who lost his job, and I wanted to sleep on my couch, and my other boyfriend was here, and I kicked him out to be with that person, and all this other kind of stuff. And I looked at her straight in the eye, and I was just like, I'm being honest with you. Do you ever talk to yourself of why you deal with these type of, let these people in your life?
Yeah.
And she could not handle it. Like, and I was being a friend. I was trying to be like, okay, you could talk about all these people in your existence that are wronging you, but you're the one letting them in.
Yeah.
And she was not ready to deal with that.
Yeah.
And that's tough because it really does kind of like, my brother said something.
Sometimes it's not necessarily something wrong about you, but it's something wrong about why you're letting these type of personalities into your life.
It's because ultimately you believe you deserve it.
Hmm.
You believe somewhere, somehow, you believe that if people are wronging you consistently, it's because somewhere deep inside you're fundamentally a bad person and you don't deserve, like, it's really hard to actually accept love. It's really hard to accept adulation. Like, I still have a time.
Not for me, I mean.
Well, I know, everyone is. But, like, even in comedy, sometimes I have a good set and people will come up to you and be like, hey, man, great set. And you're just like, oh, great audience. Yeah, great. You know, just like, I can't accept. Just like, thank you. I appreciate that. Whatever. It's tough to accept that because you feel in some way that it's, you know, oh, I don't want to get big headed. Mm. Oh, I don't want to get, you know, I don't want to get
sometimes
arrogant.
I just say thank you.
Exactly.
It's very easy to just, you know. Problem is, if somebody tells me I had a good set and I know who that person is, I'm like, fuck you. I know that wasn't a good set. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the, I remember one time I was watching Louis C.K. It was like,
it's like a big, you know, it wasn't a good set. Why are you saying that? Yeah. That type of shit.
I was at a Louis C.K. show and he, you know, he's a like an arena show and he goes, hey, everybody, good night. And the crowd goes nuts and we're all walking away and I see him walking off the stage and one of the people in the audience looks at their wives and goes, what do you think he's thinking right now? And I say out loud, I go, all the bits that didn't land in his mind, all the things that ultimately, like, he just crushed in front of 12,000 people.
Yeah.
But in his mind, I bet you at that moment, he's thinking about the things that actually weren't successful.
Ugh, bro. It's haunting. The longer I do this, the more it haunts me. The longer I do it is what I'm saying. So, like, the more time I put in, the more fuck I get about things that don't work.
A guy
the
came
more, up, like, you know, angsty, like anxiety.
Spence came up to me. My room,
anger.
My housemate Spence came up to me and he read, because he knows that I played football and I coach football. And he came up to me, he goes, I read an article that said successful coaches, when they get later in their careers.
Do you want a tequila?
I'm good. Later in their careers, they actually don't feel any joy after the win. They just feel relief, but they still feel horrible after the loss, which means they don't get the high of the win anymore.
As they used to.
As they used to. They just get the relief of, oh God, thank you. I get to keep my job. I don't get the negative press or whatever. But when they lose, they even go into that deeper hole of like, oh. And I sat there and I looked at him. I go, yeah, once you've achieved the top or the greatest, like, again, Bill Belichick doesn't feel any joy anymore when he wins a game in September. He's just like, good. We're 1-0. That's all he thinks anymore.
He doesn't get that giddiness anymore.
Exactly. Even only, and that's
I don't want to lose that, bro.
But that's the thing about, like, that's no the tough. It's got to be the toughest part because, like, I always
no way, bro.
But I love when people. You ever watch, like, they'll do a movie about like life on the road, and about a guy who's a comic and he's doing club after club and grinding and all this other kind of stuff, and I'm like, this guy's making a sad movie about our dream. Like, he's making a sad movie about what, like, every open mic comic in L.A. is aspiring to be, which is a comic that makes money just being a comic.
Yeah.
And, but the thing is the way he views it is, like, I think there was a comic, Richard Jenny. If you were in the clubs back in, like, the 80s, if you were to talk about between him and Tim Allen and Jerry Seinfeld, you'd have been like, no, Richard Jenny was the crusher. Like, I talked to people who were there in those clubs because, no, Richard Jenny was just, he was the guy that you stopped and watched. But he never got that TV show.
Yeah.
He never got that Seinfeld. He never got that Home Improvement, and it haunted him. And that's the thing. He got to play theaters. He did multiple HBO specials. He did everything you think of. But he didn't get that TV special. He didn't get that Seinfeld. He didn't get that Roseanne. He didn't get that thing. And that haunted him. And that's like, it's weird. And again, it goes back to the Anthony Bourdain thing of like, you can achieve a great thing. I could get the Mike Sasson show. I could be the host of the Tonight Show. But somebody else is making 10 times the money. Someone else becomes and gets Ellen DeGeneres money. And all of a sudden, I'm like, well, geez, I'm only making $10 million a year. This person's making $100 million. I can't afford 3 houses. I can't afford this. And it just drives you nuts.
But how do you stay humble? I think some people, it doesn't really bother them. Some people, that's the thing. Like, I think with Jenny, he wanted that thing more than anything. And yeah. He probably put all of his eggs and heart into that basket, even though he was gaining in all kinds of other shit.
I think the key is to be grateful. It sounds very foo-foo, but like being grateful.
That's what I just said. Be grateful. Yeah. Just be grateful. If you can fucking be grateful, that's everything. But at the same time, you can't be too grateful because then you won't do shit.
That's the balance.
I'm just grateful that my fucking balls work, bro. And that makes me happy enough to keep trucking.
Do my balls work?
You know?
Oh, my God.
They're mad all the time, bro.
They're just angry they're not being played with at this point.
That's exactly... Ugh. Ugh. Mm. Are we going to fuck now, bro?
Maybe.
Do you think we should?
I think we should just make love.
Should we do it on camera?
Someone pay us?
Oh, man. If someone pays us.
Yeah, it's L.A., man. Nothing's free.
Yep. Hercules said, you attract what you are. Amen, bro.
Amen, brother.
Amen. Well, I think we should fucking end this, bro. I think I'm ready to hit the... I'm going to go hang out tonight. Are you going to hang out tonight?
I'm going to go hit a mic. Get better.
Which mic are you going to do?
Probably 10 o'clock fourth wall.
Interesting. I wonder if it's got any spots, bro. Yeah, bro. I definitely need to fucking work on some new shit. Dude, I've been loving your stand-up.
Well, I appreciate that, man.
Dude, the stuff that you've been riffing about recently at a lot of these shows, man. Yeah, you were great. You've been fucking awesome.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Same here.
Well, guess what, dude?
What's up?
I just took the last spot at the fourth wall.
Fuck yeah. Fuck yeah. Let's get better, man. That's the thing. There's always
a... You're signed up for the 9 p.m.
I thought I was signed up for the 10.
Bro, you're signed up for the 9, homie.
Oh, boo. I fucked up.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, I thought I signed up for the 10. Well.
Actually, you know what? Fuck that. I'm going to go. I think I'm going to hang out, man. I need to do more hanging.
Okay.
Probably going to hang out at the haha or some shit. Chateau.
Okay, did you just eliminate the...
Yeah.
All right, so I messed up.
You might as well just go ahead. All right, well, let's end this, man. I've never done a podcast this late. I know I'm kind of like just... Different energy, man. Usually when I do it earlier in the day, I got more energy. But let's just fucking end this shit, man. It was awesome, bro.
Well, I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, man. It was fucking awesome. All right, guys. Follow Mike Sasson, man. He is funny. If you see him live, man, you guys definitely need to see him live. He's a funny motherfucker, man. I love his material when he gets on stage. He really is like the righteous Rush Limbaugh, man.
I appreciate you. At Mike Sasson, everything's at Mike Sasson.
It's right there under, I have it on the screen the whole time. At Mike Sasson on everything. Follow him. Guys, next Wednesday, 2 p.m., going live again. Thank you very much, guys. Love you.
Bye.
Public Yemeni number 1.